Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 27 of It's Just Bodybuilding. I'm your co-host, Big Ron Partlow. And of course, I'm here with my fellow co-host in crime, Dusty Hanshaw. How you doing?
Living the dream, man. Are we ready? I'm ready to get this thing rolling, man.
We got Coach's Corner coming up on It's Just Bodybuilding. Dusty, 27 episodes.
And they're still listening.
Phenomenal. Yeah, apparently. And
the number's actually climbing, and my mother only has one way to listen, so she only counts for one.
Yes, of course. Remember, everyone, subscribe and like and share and comment. It's great, too. And remember, It's Just Bodybuilding comes out every Wednesday. And we have fantastic news for you Spotify people. We are now on Spotify. So it's pretty hard to avoid us now. You really have no excuse.
That's true. And you're doing your cardio. You got every way to listen, watch, whatever you're into.
You know what? I figure if JP's listening to the Lion King, then maybe there's someone listening to us while they're squatting. Do you ever think about that?
An emotional squat. It could be weird depending on our topic while you're doing
it. What if mid-set, you know, we start talking about something completely ridiculous?
I would have a hard time with that because there might be some humor going on and I'm trying to lock in, you know.
I can't wait till someone's like, you know, I put you guys on for arm day. Good arm day. Had a good pump. I don't know why my guy just sounded like an Italian mobster. Was that?
Yeah, you changed him all the. Yeah, I like how whoever we are being, we change.
Put you on for arms. Not bad. Okay.
It's so terrible that you had to create a voice just for that. It couldn't be you.
Weird. Like I don't know. I guess that's growing up watching The Simpsons. Everyone's got to be a character.
Agreed. What a great show.
Or South Park. Everyone has to have something ridiculous about them.
Oh, God.
When you do impressions of people, do you always, change the voice?
I always make sure they're terrible. And it's not on purpose. It's just I suck at it, you know? But I go all in. Like, I commit, you know what I mean? If I'm going to do this, especially women. You ever notice you give them, the most high-pitched, weird... I don't actually know any women that sound like the woman that I am when I'm doing her voice.
Right.
Especially in our industry, I definitely don't know any that sound high-pitched.
I think the standard...
Sorry.
I think the standard for an impression of a woman is Bill Burr. And I do any female voice. I kind of do like what Bill Burr does, where he's like, well, you know, I was thinking that maybe we should get another dog. You know, I always talk like that. And I don't mean to. It's just because
I can just see Emily's like, when the fuck have I ever sounded like that?
Right. But that's just how Bill Burr. You can always tell when he goes into female characters because the voice just goes straight there.
It's as far as it can go. I love it.
Yes. So what's going on? You're squatting 405 for sets of 20.
I turned that the other day. It was just random. You know what happened was I decided the squats were open. We only have three platforms at Independence Gym. Right. And I come around the corner and they're all open. And I was like, I guess I should squat.
Right.
You know, so I'd already done a couple movements. So I was like, fuck it. And I haven't squatted in who knows how long. So I said, fuck it. And when I got to 405, as soon as I unracked it, I was like, I don't know if I want to really go any heavier than this today since it's day one. So I'm just going to do 20. And that was it. And then when I was doing it, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I could feel it at the end, you know, I was trying to just pop them out because I'm still, when you haven't squatted for a minute, dropping into the hole, you almost have to kind of let it fall to get to parallel. So, you know, they weren't the prettiest things ever, but banged them out. And then literally when I got done, I was like, as I'm breathing hard and I'm thinking about prep, I'm like, I'm going to make this a goal, see how much I can get for 20. And I think at the moment, 495 seems like a pretty steep goal.
Right. That's a lot.
So I'm going to try to do that.
Yeah. You know? Tom Platz did, what was it, 525 for 23 reps?
Yeah. And that's a ton. I remember I knew his 495, or I mean his 405 was like 26 or something like that. But he was deep squat, controlled. I had somebody actually comment on my thing. He was like, "You always talk about a four count negative." He's like, "Is that what that was?" I'm like, "Oh fuck no." That might have been a two.
Right. You know what? When Tom Platz gave his seminar at the gym, because I already know quite a bit about him. I mean, I've sort of been reading, I've been around forever, so I know the kind of the Tom Platz story.
He grew up with him.
But I didn't realize that he learned how to squat in an Olympic lifter's gym. And that's why he always wore those shoes, because they told him that's how you squat. And that's why he squatted with that close stance with the toes turned out a bit, because that's how they do with like the clean and jerk.
Right.
That front squat they do, right? It's like that narrow stance like thing they do. So that's why he squatted like that, was it as Olympic lifter squatting.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense for sure. Plus, once you get into a shoe like that, it's hard to get away. You know, I was using the lifts for everything for a minute. And Jason, my PT, was like, "You got to get out of those now. Like, you can squat with them, but nothing else." And it was like a mind fuck.
So was it overkill? Is that what you mean? Like you were stressing your knees out?
Well, actually, what it was he didn't want me using them because when I started adding the bands, he's like, for example, on a leg press, he's like, "You're going to push the weight into your toes. And when you push that much weight with that much effort into your toes," he's like, "something else is going to give. It's going to be a calf. Or it's going to be something along those lines is going to take on way too much stress at some point. So even if you think you're pushing off your heels," I mean, you know how it feels when you push a band that's heavy and you've got a shit ton of weight on there.
Yeah.
There comes a point where you're just pushing the weight. You're no longer even thinking about where from.
Every single thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to get away from them. And the whole reason I started wearing them was I had poor ankle mobility in my right ankle. And that's fixed now.
Right.
But the first day back, it was like, I'm watching my heels thinking they're going to lift up, you know what I mean? All that shit. And everything was good. So now people can stop stressing about me not wearing my Chucks enough. Because I get a lot of comments like, "Where are the Chucks?" I'm like,
right. I tell people that you are upset that I started wearing Chucks, and you're like, "Ron stole my fucking Chucks. I'm going to fucking switch shoes."
That's valid, because I'm pretty much the only guy that wears Chucks on the planet.
You know I call them just. Someone said the other day, "Why do you like Chuck so much?" And I go, "They're disposable shoes."
For sure.
You just get a new pair every 6 months. Just get a whole bunch of new ones. And you still spend less money.
Oh, God. It's not even close. That's the cool thing, is when they finally made something that was inexpensive that also people think is cool. Mm-hmm. Because I'm cheap. Like, so the fact that it fell into a cool category had nothing to do with anything. I'm like, "Oh, $50. I like those."
Yeah. My main thing with the Chucks, when I finally went, because I wore Chucks and stuff when I used to freestyle ride when I was a teenager, you know, the whole skate culture, BMX culture, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And air walks and fucking all that shit.
DC, but, did you ever wear DC shoes?
No, I never had DC. They were always too narrow for my foot.
Yeah.
Fucking killed me. Same with Vans. I couldn't wear Vans. Right. Vans were like fucking.
Vans, yeah, they, especially the ones that didn't have laces, or you have to jam your fucking foot in there.
I got like my foot's like 6 inches wide. It's a big set. I don't know, big farmer Flintstone thing. So I need like a croc.
Jose always says I have Fred Flintstone feet. He's like, "What the fuck is that? Looks like a mallet of some sort."
Yeah. But my favorite thing about the Chucks is that, and I tell this to everyone, I got so used to my feet being chronically hot because I was wearing Jordans all the time.
Oh God, the non-breathable shoe.
And then when I started wearing the Chucks, I was like, "Oh my God, I didn't realize how fucking hot my feet were." Yep. And how not hot they are now.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, I wore my Jordans to the gym the other day, and like about halfway through my workout, I felt like I had heaters
in your shoes.
Like I broke those, I don't know if you know about Canada, but you snap those heat sticks and you put them in your boots, right? You know, that's like
someone snapped them in your boot, but the problem was the boot was a Jordan that can't breathe.
Yeah, just funny how noticeable it is. But what you said there actually takes me to my first topic, which was like, we didn't even plan that. But the one thing I wanted to talk about, because, you know, when we do the Coach's Corner episodes, we always get a chance to talk about training.
Always.
Because we don't talk about training with half our guests.
We get less and less, especially if we know them.
Yeah. So one of the things I had was just that I noticed that sometimes, I mean, I'm big on execution. I think execution is extremely important. Obviously, like, you have to do exercises correctly.
Right.
But I got a little obsessed with perfect maximal execution of everything over the years. I've had little phases where I would get a little too obsessed with execution, right, and I would wind up getting some kind of injury. And so I had a question the other day. Someone was telling me they were having shoulder problems, and I was talking about what they were doing. And one of the first things I asked them was, what do you do for triceps? Because the pain he was describing was the same pain I had. And I was like, mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I do this and this and this. And I picked it out. I took kind of a guess, right, but an educated guess, picked right. it out, and he stopped doing it and shoulder got better. And I was like, fuck. So I'm not the only one. And what it was, you know, like the perfect tricep contraction is actually behind you.
Yeah.
Right. So just because that's the shortest you can get the long head of your tricep, right, is to move right. your hand past your hip out behind you. But does that mean that's necessarily good to load your shoulder joint in that position?
Right.
Right. So sometimes we think, okay, the shortest the muscle can get is here, and the longest it can get is here. So right. I'm going to do the rep like absolutely the fullest possible range. But that doesn't necessarily mean that your shoulders are going to like you.
Right. Yeah. And some other body parts.
Yeah. So here you are elevating your heels, wearing those shoes on everything.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden it's like, well, geez, now your knees are now taking, like, over the course of those workouts, taking a lot more load.
Right.
So that's where we always get back to, you know, like when I asked Joe Bennett about, you know, how much heel elevation on a safety bar squat would be like maximal quad. And he goes, well, how old are you?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. You already tore your quad once. So do you want to load, you know, like there's so many other factors. And yeah. I wanted to remind people of that because, you know, when I told this guy, I was like, quit doing those like perfect, maximal, optimal contraction.
Right.
Even though that's a single arm cable movement with 50 pounds, that was what was hurting his shoulder.
Right. Which makes sense. I mean, and I think the other thing is because you're doing both. You know, same on the stretch. I like the rubber band theory with triceps. Like, you know, if going to here is fully stretched, well, if I let it actually drift the elbow go forward, it's a little bit more stretch.
It's a long head, yeah.
Yeah, so I like to do that, but it's funny because I've had people watch the videos and then they'll say to me, hey, when I do that, it hurts my elbow. What should I do? And I'm like, knock it off.
Right.
Like, right. Don't do you it. Know, because that's, I mean, it's terrible, but there's nothing magic about it. And I think it's interesting that we do get caught in that thing, especially if you see someone who has a body part that you want, and they say X is my favorite exercise.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that must be the reason that he's got that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I like to say that X is his favorite exercise. But it's not the exercise that made that body part great. It's the fact that he loves that exercise, so he fucking goes nuts on it, and he got really good at it.
Right.
And he got really strong at it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you love an exercise, being progressive on it's going to be, well, yeah. not easier. Nothing's easier, but more mentally easier,
it's
funner.
It's enjoyable. Yeah, it's something you want to yeah. chase. I mean, that makes total sense to me. I think you can definitely get off track. Chasing an exercise that's not for you.
Yeah. I had a talk with a guy at the gym a few weeks ago. He was like telling me how, man, I'm just, you know, he's in his 40s and he's talking to me how he's just struggling for the past year to get back in the squat rack.
Right.
He's like, I just fucking, you know, I can bent row and I can shoulder press and I can hack squat and I every time I get back in the squat rack, something goes wrong with my back or my rib. Or my lower right. back or my hip. And I just said, have you entertained the idea of just not squatting anymore?
And he's like,
like, you're already 40. Like, what, yeah. you've done 1,000 sets of squats. He squatted 5 plates back in the day when he was on the juice, you know, on the sauce right. back in the late 80s, you know, whatever it was. I guess
that's,
he's my
that's
age.
The problem. So he's older than everybody has to link in that, right? The,
yeah.
It's like you have to squat. You hear that all the time from people. why don't you squat? And it's like, I don't need to.
Yeah. I had two more that were clear examples of this. So one is I was having all these hip pains in the front of my hip.
Right.
And I was like, what the fuck? Like, and it kept coming and going. Like I just couldn't find the trigger for it. And then one day it finally stood out to me. Every once in a while I would do leg extensions.
Right.
But I would try to, again, take that quad to like the ridiculously shortened position. So I wouldn't just do a good
almost hyperextending your knee.
I would do that, but I would also really stick my butt out behind me and lean forward.
Right.
Right. So tilt the pelvis back and then lean forward. So you shorten that upper quad that crosses the hip joint. So right. I'd just be like shortening it to the max.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo. I did it one day. We did a bunch of hard sets and then a strip set. And the next day my hip was fucked.
And then the light bulb went.
And I was like, ping. It's those fucking leg extensions where I'm taking it to maximum shortened range.
Right.
So the next week we did leg extensions and I leaned back a little bit, almost like I was trying to get a bit more stretch.
Right.
Fucking hip was 100% fine.
And that's why I think it's funny is because I actually do the opposite. I'm more obsessed about the stretch than the contraction.
Oh, yeah. The stretch is more important, I think. Yeah.
So, and I think that with that, though, I've almost gotten to the point where I'm like, good enough, like on the contraction. Because sometimes I see videos, like we did dips one day, and I was like, that works for me, but I'm not going to post it. Because the range was so short at the top. I literally was like,
were you just at the top? Like it was a top half dip?
No, extreme stretch on the bottom, staying vertical though.
So your bare
tries are getting. I was nowhere near straightening my elbow. I remember looking. I was like, "Fuck, that's even shorter than I thought." But my tries, I can feel them just exploding. So I'm like, "All right, that's fine for me." But if I were to, I would never describe that movement to a client that way.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Because if it's also how much can you contract in a range.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like some people have to go all the way to lockout to get something to really contract. And then some of us, you can just make the muscle fire, you know?
Yeah. Another one I did was I was doing the hammer seated calf where you just push straight out.
Yep.
And I was doing single legs. And, you know, I was thinking, well, what's like the craziest thing I can do to get my calf activated? And I was going like to the maximum peak contraction, but then also flexing my quad.
Oh,
right.
Jesus.
Because I saw a video, actually it was Pekulski who was doing it on a video, and he was talking about like how the knee and the calf tie together and how that's like a crazy load on the calf. Right. Cause you also get the craziest stretch, right? If your knee is very, very straight or, you know, as long as you're not using a crazy load on a lock knee, obviously, but you know, you only got like a plate and a half a side if you're doing single foot. Right.
Yeah. So you need sort of range.
Yeah, yeah. So I was doing those, and again, it's not even a heavy weight because it's so hard to. It's mechanically so weak, right? So you're in a like crazy stretch, and then this crazy contraction, and fucked. Was I having these weird pains in the back of my knee, like fucked up? Like it wasn't my quad. I could squat, but something in the back of my knee was just so stiff and sore, and so I quit doing those. And so this is all this fucking mental masturbation stuff.
Right.
You know, this goes back to the sledgehammer versus the scalpel.
Right.
that we talked about, you know, and, you know, even people like me have been training forever, but we're, and this is the trap that you and I will fall into occasionally is because we're always trying to find like a more efficient way.
Right.
Or maybe if I do this, it'll deload my joints a bit, you know, because I've been training a long time, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, oh, fuck, now I'm in worse shape. What happened?
I think what's funny, though, is the difference. And I think my big complaint on bodybuilding, I hate to group, but the youth of bodybuilding is always looking for an easier way to do things. I feel like the old school guys are always looking for a way to make it harder. And sometimes in that quest, we make it more difficult, but not more efficient.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
You know, and I think that's what you should really be obsessing about is how does the muscle feel after you do this? And then say, okay, now with that, was it worth any trade-off that I might have had, like you said, down the line? And that's why I don't like to change things all at once. I see people like really upend their training, and I'm like, ooh, bring a movement in. Dump something that's not working. Bring something in. How does it go? And also, I mean, you can really get down to it is if you want to keep your body healthy, there's actually an order that you should follow in the gym. You can't just wing it. Like I've had clients say, oh, that wasn't available, so I went to this. And I'm like, no. Like, I don't want you doing a heavy dumbbell skull crusher first.
Yeah.
Like, fuck, man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you can know? Do it. You can do it when you're young because you don't know the difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you'll pay for it later. I think so, too. Like, I mean, I do all my leg workouts now. I do a leg curl. Then I do an extension.
Uh-huh.
And then I go into the compound number one. And right. Where I'm like, okay, this is what the day's about.
Yeah, you're prime now. Plus, I kind of like, I can now individually feel the muscles firing because they did get a little pump.
Yeah.
You know, totally. They are moving. So that's huge. And the big thing is just the blood. And same thing goes with wearing your equipment. I have guys ask me all the time, like, at what point should I start wearing elbow sleeves? I'm like, before you need them.
You know? Yeah.
Don't wait, because I get that a lot too. People are like, oh, your elbows must be made out of fucking whatever because you can do that heavy weight. And I'm like, I've been wearing sleeves since I was like starting.
Right.
I always used to joke I'd get my Battle Cat gear on before the heavy sets.
Right.
I got the
fucking
wrists, I got the elbows, but it's like, you know, I just knew that stability needed to be there. Plus, I like to go through all my warm-ups without them. So when I go to the heavy set, it doesn't seem so drastic because it's like, oh, elbow sleeves. There we go.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you got a bunch of Coach's Corners questions, don't you?
Yeah, we got some good ones. And I like that they're a little bit all over the place today. So I think when I tell people like, hey, we didn't really give you a ton of time. So what do you want to know? We got some variety shit here.
The feedback on the last show was great. People love Nick Walker. A lot of people were really glad to be introduced to him.
I'm blown away by how many people didn't, I guess because Nick's not out there a ton, how many people didn't realize that he's like a personable, cool guy?
Oh, everyone's like, wow, what a cool guy. And then the feedback on the last half hour where we were chatting about movies and music was great. Like the amount of messages I got. So three people sent me Chicago songs.
Dude, so I don't know if you saw my post yesterday, but I was at the Container Store, you know, doing man shit. Because when I get ready to start, and I haven't prepped, dude, in like 2 years. Right. So, and I just like to have, it sounds so silly because I'm home all day, but I like all my food to be in Tupperwares and ready to go even when I'm at home. Right. So like if I'm in the middle of something, I grab it, throw it in the microwave, eat, done, you know? And I realized I didn't have any Tupperware that fit a full meal, especially when I started adding greens to them. So I was like, all right, I'm going to head down to this Container Store and buy some Tupperware. And as I'm sitting there, the Peter Cetera comes on.
Oh.
And I'm like, little memory of it's just bodybuilding.
Yes. You know,
he's the man fighting
for those for who honor. Don't know who Peter Cetera. Peter Cetera was in Chicago, right? Is that the
exactly.
point?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I was dying when they came on because I'm sitting there and I'm like, is it weird if I just stand here and wait for the song to end? I've already got my Tupperware.
It was great. I love
it. I am straight, but I just needed my Tupperware and I love this song. So I'm just going to
wait. Right. Takes me back.
Takes me back to before I was born. Oh, shit.
I also had a lot of, I had several people message about Tombstone and some of the movies we mentioned. They were like, sending me gifts. I got the gif of Val Kilmer spinning his fucking coffee cup. You know?
Everyone knows that shit, right? That's the thing is you could just sit there for like 30, 40 minutes easily and go back and forth with quotes of Tombstone.
Yeah.
All by itself, you know? I had that conversation. I texted you, remember? Out of the blue, I go, Top Gun, no other words.
Oh, you know, did I tell you the story about the kid that I got turned on to AC/DC? Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
Oh, fuck. I think I had it ready one day and we just didn't get to it. That's the thing is we have so many topics that we fucking miss half of them. this kid sends me a message and he's like, I just went back and listened to the Highway to Hell album. I'd never heard it before. Obviously, I'd heard Highway to Hell because I recognized it from the radio. But then the other songs I had never heard. That fucking album is incredible. I can't stop listening to it. Now I'm downloading all these other, what should I listen to next? Like, what's the next AC/DC album? I don't want to do them in the wrong order. And
that's fucking awesome.
These guys are awesome. And I guess, so he was normally into like metal.
Right.
So he thought AC/DC, that's like old man, like that's like the Rolling Stones, right? Like he's thinking that's like the Beatles, like that's old, right?
My dad listens to that shit.
Yeah, but they're not. They were like back in the day, they were way heavier than the Rolling Stones, and they were nothing like the Beatles. You know, in the 70s, AC/DC was like fucking rocking. Like people are like, who the fuck are these guys? Yeah, so anyways, sure. He went back and listened to the album, and then he sent me all this stuff like, man, I'm a huge fan now. And I used to just, I never paid attention to it. It'd come on the radio, I'd turn the station. But he's like, now that I realized, because, you know, once you know something about the people, he realized right. It's, you know, the two brothers that play guitar, and he started, now he loves them. Right. So I was just fucking smiling ear to ear. I was like, I just got some 22-year-old kid to become an AC/DC fan.
Plus, pretty much saved his life, if you think about it.
Then he realized, he's like, you know, he said he should have given them a chance earlier because half of his favorite musicians list them as an influence.
Right.
Because he's into metal.
Yeah.
And he just was like,
didn't click that.
Yeah, yeah. So now he's full. I was just so happy. I was like, come home and tell Emily. I'm like, I got some kid onto Hakadaka.
She's like, what? What? Can you get arrested selling him that? Never mind.
It will ruin his life. Okay.
Might be legal in Canada.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. We're getting to this. StayCold_MMX wants to know, what's your least favorite part about the industry today? And I had to give it to you first because I read this one early and I was like,
I guess it would just be the belief that you need all these drugs in like the first 5 years of your training, like this lack of awareness of what building a natural foundation does for you for the rest of your life, and this no patience, and you know, yeah, just the drug abuse. The focus on the drugs is my mm-hmm. least favorite part, because I mean, like, you know, we've told a million stories about that. I'm sure people are blue in the face hearing us fucking go on about how you just can't rely on, it's just not about the drugs, but there's just so many people miss that. And it'd be my least favorite thing. It would be kind of tied in, I guess, generally with a patience thing, like a lack of awareness of how long this is supposed to take.
Right.
You know, not everyone's Nick Walker, you know, well, I'm not. You know, where he's 25 and he's like huge, right? Like most guys, like you're not going to get that big till you're in your 30s. Like, fuck, it takes forever.
Well, and they still connect. What's funny to me about that is the connection is still, and Nick said this, I don't know if it was, I was talking to him or on our show, but he said the same thing. The immediate assumption is he must just be on a ton of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It must be.
It's like, even if, fine, grab one of your friends that's crazy and have him get a ton of shit. I promise you, he's not going to turn into Nick Walker.
Yeah. So that would be it. Like that text you sent me last night.
That was you fucking can say it. It's hilarious. Funny. Go ahead.
So you put it out there. You sent me a text last night and he goes, I just got a client and, you know, we set everything up. And I said, well, I think 400 tests and 200 EQ is plenty.
Yeah.
And he responded, okay, should I take that 2 or 3 times a week?
That's why I had to send it to you. I laughed. I was like, that was total.
That is total. That's per week. Yes. And also too, like just, I get satisfied. Like I got a couple guys that I took on and the first thing I did was put them down to a cruise.
Right.
And a couple months later, they're like, oh, my strength's up in everything.
Yeah.
So,
but then what sucks is there's still that itch because it's like, all right, my strength's up on anything now. Now, when do we go back up?
Right. Right.
And it's like, and I think, you know, even me, if I could go back and change something I did, it would have been to be more patient on how long it takes to get bigger. Yeah. I do believe, like when I look back at my early, early pictures, I never had some like streamlined genetics, but I think I made them worse rushing. I think I highlighted, you know, blown out the midsection more and that through. And it wasn't just rushing drugs. It was rushing food. It was just how fast can I get as heavy as possible?
Yeah.
And I do think, don't get me wrong, I mean, that is the goal, point A to point B. But you should be mindful of the whole way watching your physique. Because in a perfect world, what you are at your finish line should be the same thing you were in the beginning, just bigger.
Yeah.
So I feel like my taper was better when I was 26 than it is now.
Right.
And I'm bigger. I mean, drastically bigger. But I'd have a really hard time saying, if I was just judging for myself, that this is better.
Right.
It's just bigger.
I know what you mean.
You know, I think I'd like to take a guy and say, okay, I'm adding 2 years to how long it takes you to get there. But are you willing to give me that 2 years if I promise you it's a much better look?
I was always known for having a small waist and really wide shoulders. So I was always known for having like a crazy X.
Right.
Because with my waist being so tiny, my legs had a nice full look to them and my shoulders were super wide. So that was how I did well.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, you know, most people didn't really comment or say anything, but I know that from the time I started competing in 97 to 2008, my waist was at its smallest.
Right.
2009 was the year I went to 330 pounds.
Right.
And from that point to the end of my career, I could never get my waist as tight. Right. Or as tapered. It always had a little bit of like distension. And I didn't get like, it's not noticeable. No one ever comments, but I know it. My abs did separate like a half a centimeter.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you had the natural separation in the front and then they're just slightly wider than they used to be. And like you see on some of the pros, like Dennis James had that big gap.
Yeah.
And some of the guys, cause they blew their waist out so bad.
Yeah.
And so I had a little bit of that. It was enough to make me like panic. And that's why like the last few years with Chris, I didn't even really go over 310, I don't think.
Right.
Because I was like, I don't really, like I didn't want to feel bloated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it isn't always worth it to just blast up. Because I look at some of my pictures from like 06, 07, 08, and yeah. I'm like, Jesus, fuck, my waist is like.
Right.
So even though I'm smaller.
What was the weight difference between those points and when you turned pro, say?
Well, I'd hit 320.
Oh, but I mean, on stage.
Oh, on stage. 10, 14 pounds.
See, that's the crazy part that we've discussed before is it's such, and I know you're in the same spot, like you can't carve a pebble. You need to get big, but it's such a gray statement because at the end of the day, what really matters is how much weight you put on stage. And more importantly, how does it look?
Yeah.
Because when you think about it, so you're talking how many years is that? You said 2009
was when I felt like my waist got a little bit blown out.
Okay. So 2008, you weighed what when you were on stage?
Mid 250s, low 250s.
Okay. And what did you turn pro at?
260. Well, I was 265 or 266.
All right, so we'll call it 15 pounds.
Maybe.
You know, 12 to 15 pounds.
12, let's say 12,
yeah. All right, so you have 12 pounds difference. I totally understand that the question mark is you judging those two physiques against each other, which one do you like better?
I think the earlier one got less injuries, and to me, I could see little symmetry differences, right, that other people weren't noticing yet, but I was, like, picking them apart.
Right. I think that's a cool thing when you've got that though, because that's something I think if you're a true bodybuilder, you should keep that in mind while you're on your way up. Is like, you know, don't just chase what you think they're rewarding necessarily, because it's got to be a look you love. You know, like I've said on this show a million times, and like my favorite show ever was 2011, which is my worst placement.
Right.
But I was peeled and I went through hell for the show and it was just, I'll always remember. That's the little one.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. We like the personality.
Chill.
Okay. Well, now what about you? We got to finish your question.
What? Oh, so for me,
what's the thing you dislike the most about the industry?
It's funny because I guess I'm on this kick of everything's gravy lately, because I really do think a lot in the industry is really awesome. I would say what I dislike currently the most is I think across the board, we're getting blinded and we're not thinking forward with what we're rewarding with competitors. For example, we got people dying from bodybuilding now because they're chasing something they can't have. And again, back to what we just went over, maybe not something that necessarily makes them better. I really am having a harder and harder time working with some of the females because I feel like I find myself in a jam, and not all of them. I've got some great female competitors I work with, but I've had a few I've let go recently because what they wanted to do didn't match in my head what they should do long term. I think they were thinking about the stage and winning right now, and they weren't thinking about the fact they're going to age their face 10 years in two. Their voice is never coming back. Their skin's never going to be the same. And when they're done with this, they're going to be like so many other women that I hear about that say, I hate bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And bodybuilding didn't do that to you. You did it.
Yeah.
Because I have plenty of clients that have won and went on lots of levels, but they don't lose track of what matters to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and I think that's just difficult because we're competitors. You chase what it's going to win, and then you're not really thinking fully.
Yeah. Yeah, totally understood. There we go.
Harvey's joining the show.
So how's Harvey and Donna getting along?
They get along awesome. They just they play like crazy, and she is loud. Like, she's fierce. So he pushes her around, and she starts making a lot of noise like she is. So if I just separate them a little bit, they're good to go. I had given him a bone when the show started, but apparently those got boring. So here, so here we are. But that's all right. It's good, though. He's good for views because he's so handsome. He did not get that from me.
There we go. He did not get that from me.
No, sir. No, sir, he did not.
Hey, guys. Why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Those are good questions. This is a good one for you. We're sticking on this line of growing. How did you decide I'm going to be a great open class bodybuilder and going to be a freak? I mean, his words were nail 300 pounds. What was your mindset?
I was like, first of all, the question's interesting how he worded it. Did you catch what he said? How did you know you were going to be a freak open class bodybuilder? Right. There was only bodybuilding.
Yeah.
That's all we had. So there were two choices: not compete or try to look like Dorian.
Right. Which meant be a freak.
That was it. Either you didn't win or you looked like a 90s pro.
Right.
So one of my favorite ways to describe this to people is back when I first started competing, we didn't have obviously access to any of these photos and videos of every single show like we have now.
Right.
All we had, the only standard we had, was what was in Flex Magazine and what was on the Mr. Olympia VHS tapes.
Olympia. Doo-doo.
Mr. Olympia. Yep. So, you know, you'd put in the 89 Olympia.
Yep.
And you'd turn it on and you'd see Lee Haney, Barry DeMay, Lee Labrada, Sean Ray, Rich Gaspari.
Right.
And they were all shredded out of their fucking minds with skeleton faces.
Yep.
And then you'd put on, what else did we have? And by 97, we had the Blood and Guts video where we saw Dorian training. That was
it. Do you have the Battle for the Olympias yet?
Yeah, they had, I think 97 or 98 was the first year they did it.
Okay, gotcha.
So they hadn't, like, you know what I mean? So I started before those. So, but even then, they're all pros. So that's all right. We had. So the mindset was, I'll compete when I'm big enough to compete. So the only standard was the pros. So I would be like, okay, well, you know, I'm 6'1". So, you know, Barry DeMay was 6'1", and he was 230 shredded.
Right.
So, you know, I know by that point, Paul Dillette was coming into the mix and he was like 260. So I'm thinking, well, fuck, I got to be at least 230 for my first show. So my standard for my first show was a pro.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't my buddy who won the Northerns or this guy at the gym that looks good. My standard was that, because I went to my first show assuming there was going to be 20 people like me.
Right.
Like, I thought, okay, I'm going to my first show. Heavyweight class will be jacked. There'll be all these fucking freaks there. Everyone will be shredded and it's going to be tough.
It's a good thing to walk into expecting that. That took your prep to another level.
Yeah, well, that's how you prepare for a show, is you'd look at pictures in Flex and you'd go, okay, well, I'm not ready yet. I had to keep dieting. So it was just different, because now the mindset's like, we're looking at so many other people that some people, like you say, who's your favorite pro, and they can't name one.
Right.
So then you're like, well, it's just different. So the mindset going in was you had to be a freak or there was no point in competing. Like, I trained for 7 years before I did my first like sanctioned fucking bodybuilding show where you're on your road to the pro card, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's because I just think, well, what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah. Why would I diet now when I'm nowhere near looking like a bodybuilder?
Yeah. So the way he worded that with the divisions and stuff, there were no choices. It was like, be a freak or don't bodybuild. And I was like, well, I love bodybuilding and I want to be a freak. So it was just so automatic. There was no thought at all.
No, I get that. And I think, I mean, for me, I was just drawn to it. You know, it's funny. A lot of people do the parallel with superheroes and that. I was never into that. Just wasn't my thing. But long before I was in the gym, I would be the kid that bought a Flex magazine for some reason at the grocery store and just flipped through it and read. And I knew who Dorian was before I followed bodybuilding. I knew who Sean Ray was before I followed bodybuilding. Just from every now and then, you're kind of like drawn into like, God, these guys are freaks. Yeah. And then when I got into it, I think what's funny is I wanted to be a spectacle.
Like, yeah, totally.
Like, I wanted to walk around and like, I remember the first time I heard someone say like, oh, that's gross. When I walked by and I was like, oh, yes. Right. Yes. I'm starting to make it. You know, like it was Labrada said, Hunter, about his dad, like he knew his lane. I knew what I wanted. And it was always to just be a nasty freak. Yeah. You know, I had no idea what that meant. But I knew I wanted to do.
I remember like hearing and reading like, oh, shit, like, you know, Paul Dillette's 300 pounds in the offseason.
Right.
And he was my height. people would say, so like, what's the goal? And I'm like, well, I have to get 300 pounds. And they're like, why? And I'm like, because that's the standard. Like, Paul Dillette's my height. He's 300 off season, 265, 270 on stage. So I have to be that big because that's the standard. Like,
yeah, it was black and white to you.
Black and white. So, you know, and then people would say like, oh, well, when's big enough? And I'd always say, never big enough. Like, I want to grow so much muscle, my fucking just rips my bones apart.
Right.
You know?
What's funny is I still think that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There really isn't a big enough. I mean, look at it. Like, I mean, and it's not to say that your physique can't go downhill if it keeps getting bigger. Yeah, but there's something about just saying, like, what's weird is I feel bad for guys, and we just talked today about bringing some on. Like, what would it be like when, for like Flex Lewis, when bodybuilding became body maintaining?
Right.
Or body polishing, or like, it couldn't get any he couldn't do any more building.
Yeah.
He's going to go over his limit. You know what I mean? And that would just, I mean, that would change, that changed the way you train, changed the way you eat, changed your entire year, because if I put on 5 pounds, I'm fucked.
Well, I've told
it back
you,
off.
I've told you before about that 6 ounce life that Flex was living.
Yes. No way.
You know, and I had that meal with him, and he's like, oh, I need a 6 ounce steak, because that's all Neil's going to let me eat, or I get too big.
Yeah. They'll accidentally put on too much muscle. It's a problem most people don't have, but I hear it.
Yeah. Did you answer the question yet?
Yep.
We're good?
Yes.
Okay, I got a question for you. How dirty did you actually eat at your dirty bulkiest?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I had competed. I'd done 2 or 3 shows. And mind you, like I told you, when I competed the first time, I had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
I was like, all right, I'm going to get shredded. I got 6 weeks. I'm going to eat tuna and water for 6 weeks, and that'll get me there. So then when I was done, it became get huge. Get huge just meant eat calories. So I was and I grew up. I was an only child. Both my parents worked. So I grew up on fast food. So McDonald's was a go-to, not like here and there, like 2 to 3 times a day, I would go to McDonald's, because in my mind, protein, fat, carbs,
right,
we're good. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's a fucking Egg McMuffin, but we're good, you know? Yeah. And I never even, what's funny is I never even like looked into the calories of each one. I just knew like, well, yeah, if I eat, you know, 4 quarter pounders, that's, you know, it's a lot of protein. Mm-hmm. All right, we're good. So what was funny about that is I got up to 260 pounds. Fat as fuck. No idea. I was huge. I was 260. You know, when you're at that point, you're stepping on the scale all the time. As long as it's going up, we're good. We are good.
Yeah. The first time I hit 300 was the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to 260 and I dieted down for a show. Hey, you want to talk about it? We're in the middle of it. I got down to 208 for this on stage, and I still wasn't in shape.
Yeah.
So 52 pounds of fat was not enough. Okay. You want to be on the show?
Yeah. I've been there before, man. I've been there.
So yeah, no, I ate terribly, but the good thing was, is, I'm glad it happened when it did, because I was young enough that I didn't kill my health, and it was a wake up, like, oh shit, you know? And now, like when I fast forward years later, I had employees when I owned the store who would come in and they're like, oh, you're doing another show. And I'm like, no, why? Well, that's the same food you were eating during the prep. I'm like, well, but there's more of it. Cause that became my new life, which was just same food, more of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Year round. So it's funny how you evolve, and people are like, oh, you're a clean eater. I'm like, I'm a bodybuilder.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. I remember when I went to Australia, and I met John Davey, who was a good friend of mine. He owns a bunch of world gyms down there. I've mentioned him before.
Yeah.
But he was like the big bodybuilder at the gym. Like, and everyone's like, that guy's going to win nationals like next year. He's going to turn pro. There's like, there's no one's going to beat that guy. He had the big quads. You know, he's 285. He just, you know.
Didn't he do the Olympia in 03?
He did the 03 Olympia. So he was a very, very, very good bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And but I remember seeing him at the gym and stuff. And when we started hanging out, I was blown away at how clean he ate.
Right.
Like, cause I was this 19-year-old kid, like bodybuilding was all fun and games. I was training my ass off, eating fucking burgers. And, you know, I just like you, like I just grab like whatever protein shake was in the fridge at the gym and just guzzle it and eat a piece of fruit. And I'd be like, okay, post-workout's done.
Right.
You know, and then like.
No rhyme or reason.
No, protein, you know, just like carbs
done.
Protein.
Yep.
That's post-workout, you know? So I just throw whatever, you know, and of course I eat my meals too. Like I'm cooking chicken and rice at home.
Yeah.
But there's just so much other shit going in my mouth. Like every chance, like you want to stop and grab something to eat? Fuck yeah, I'd order pizza, you know? But John would order like steak, veggies, baked potato, plain.
Right.
And I just remember thinking like, fuck, I can't believe he doesn't eat any junk. And then like randomly once every 3 months, he'd be like, do you want to get some pizza?
Yes.
And I'd be like, yeah, you know, so
yesterday, but let's do this.
he'd have 3 slices and then he'd have a protein shake and say, okay, I'm done.
Right.
And it was just funny. He's like the cleanest eating huge guy I'd ever known. Because I was like, how the fuck do you get big if you don't eat more calories? Like, I remember just having a hard time. You used to grab plain baked potatoes and eat them like apples.
Right. Been there.
You'd do it driving.
I would have salt in a potato.
Yeah. Just fucking funny, man. But so, yeah. So that was the first time, because I'd just been, you know, I've been a Wendy's bodybuilder all through high school. Shakes, Wendy's, steak, you know, good wholesome farm food, but lots of junk.
Yeah.
And I remember when I met him, I was like, oh, he's like off seasons as clean as a diet.
Right.
Just you know, more. And that was the first time I encountered that. So, you know, it only took me like, you know, several more decades to start eating that clean all year long.
Yeah, he's weird. Fuck him.
He's just weird. So,
can't
yeah,
disagree
but
with that.
No, totally. Totally. Yeah, hit me with another one.
Yes. You know what? I have one that I had to grab from today. I had a kid that couldn't, he couldn't get his question on my little list here. Wait, bum, 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 bum. Not too easy. Oh, here's one. This is quick, and I'm going to find the other one because I have to go into my questions. A guy asked, he said, Chad said that DECA sucks. I'd like to hear your guys' opinion.
I hate DECA.
Me too.
I think DECA's like, sure, on paper, it's a great steroid, but DECA is a great steroid for like athletes who take 100 milligrams a week, you know, like right. When you're dealing with these track and field guys. And then of course it's a terrible drug for them because it's the one that hangs around the longest for drug testing. So, you know, a little bit of nandrolone could be a great drug for an athlete, but it's also the longest it hangs around in a drug test. So the Olympic people hate it.
Right.
And then for bodybuilding purposes, once you're taking like an effective dose, I think it's just loaded with side effects.
Yeah.
And anything that makes your dick not work properly
is not worth it.
Just fucking hit the road with that shit.
Yeah.
I had no time for that.
Yeah. That's,
you know?
That's a simple answer to me too. I'm like, oh yeah, that's not going to work.
I consider my dick an emergency responder. He has to be ready to go at all times. You don't call a fireman and they're like, oh, I'm taking the night off.
I can't. Sorry.
Yeah, it's like, no, we have a fire. Like,
well, you know what they say
now.
The responsibility of a man is to make sure she doesn't need another man.
Right.
So if you go in there with that problem, she's gonna need another man today.
Yeah. So it's funny. I just joked that DECA sucks. And actually, the reason I hate DECA is because if I take one shot of DECA, I will instantly get gyno on my left side.
Just the way your body clicks with it. With the 19, like prolactin. 19 or in general, or just that one, yeah.
Well, so especially DECA because it's the long-acting one.
Yeah.
Now, NPP, mm-hmm. I can take a bit of, but I'm not – I will never take it again because I don't take hardly anything anymore.
Yeah.
But when I used to use NPP, I remember the last couple times I used it, I thought it gave me a little bit of a more watery appearance.
Right.
And I remember when I stopped taking it, all of a sudden I like hardened up a lot.
Right.
So I just don't like any of that shit. I just don't like nandrolones, period.
I agree. I think it's one of those things where the reason a lot of young guys fight it is it's kind of like the training. You know, they get done with a great cycle of test and EQ. What should I do next time? I'm like, well, let's just do that again.
Bang.
It was awesome. So
yeah,
we should change it? Why?
Yeah. So like a switch that I think the idea that you have to switch up drugs all the time is also completely wrong.
Of course it is.
If you use them up and down, on and off, and you don't like just ram a lot all the time and get desensitized completely, I don't think you need to switch compounds. Like Advil has worked for me my whole life.
Yeah. It's always my go-to for pain. It still works.
Caffeine still works. Had some this morning.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is everyone wants to complicate this more than they should. And I think it goes back to also we want to complicate all this other shit, but then not just focus on the very basics. You know, I've had kids that have questions about drugs and the depth of them are beyond my scope. And then my answer to win the conversation is immediately, when's the last time you missed a meal?
Exactly. I had a
then message don't from know a, all this shit. Eat your food.
Yeah. I had a message from a kid the other day. He goes, I'm taking 50 milligrams of Anavar a day. I'm wondering if I should take 25 milligrams AM and 25 PM or if I should take 10 milligrams five times. And my answer was, make sure you put the pills in your hand and then put the pills in your mouth at some point during the day.
In a time you won't forget to take them ever.
Right. Ideally, a half and half would be great, obviously, with an oral. But I just said, man, like, you can't be carrying Anavar. The guy lives in the States. So, okay, you live in the States. So you're going to carry Anavar around with you all day. And just one day, you have a bad day and you get arrested.
You couldn't get arrested in the afternoon when you only had one left. You have.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I don't know. That's just how I think, right? Just simplify shit.
No, I like to oversimplify. I used to with things like that because I know me. I'm not going to split it. I'm just not going to do it. So I was like, I guess I'll take it like an hour before I train. That should work.
There you
like,
go.
So it was like, you know, I'd eat my pre-workout meal and then I would take this. All right, that'll work. It seems to have worked. I put on a pound or two.
That's funny. Is it your question or my question?
Yeah, I wanted to ask this one I was looking for.
Okay.
Been training natural for 12 years. Haven't gained much, if any, muscle the last five or six. I'm only 160 pounds lean. I have tiny parents. There's a lot of whys. You think I've met my natural potential?
Well, no.
I was going to say, I know you don't have enough information, so you're going to go into all the things you already know.
Yeah, I mean, for him to have met his natural potential, his training would have to be, you know, off the wall, ridiculously intense for a long, long, like 10 years. And he'd have to have proof showing me he ate, you know, enough calories for 10 years, all that stuff. Yeah. There's always more work you can do. You can always work harder. You can always put in more effort. You know, he's definitely doesn't sound like he's got an advantage of any kind.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
yeah, that was the question was his potential. And I think that's where the key is my answer is real simple on this. Because based on this statement, you think that you met your natural potential in 6 years. Because out of 12, you said you haven't gained anything in six of them. So to me, it's really, really simple. You have to ask yourself, like you just said, am I missing any meals? Okay, are the meals big enough? Am I sleeping? Am I training? One thing you and I have discussed many times is the fact that intensity is something that you learn progressively.
Yeah.
I've had clients, this is something I like to, it'll come up on accident on the regular. Someone will say, I had the nastiest workout. And I'm like, man, I wish I could have been there training with you, you know, because I'm stoked for them. And they're like, oh, that would suck if you came. And I'm like, what do you mean? But you'd kill me. And I'm like, well, you just said it was the nastiest training possible. That means I couldn't kill you.
Right.
So it's like, so you already know in the back of your head, there's levels above where you're at. And I mean, we all know that. I know that even to this day. I think I put a post about that mentally recently. But your job should be to chase it then.
Yeah.
Find that click.
And he said, you know, he didn't make any gains for the last 6 years, but he did for the first six. So maybe his eating and training was enough stimulus and enough food to get to this point, and he hasn't realized he has to up it all.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, well, I grew for 6 years and I stopped. Well, that's because that's where your training and nutrition were set. That's where you are.
You have to know. As those things to take you.
Yeah. And another phrase is, I know it's, you know, not wildly accurate, but it's a good like mantra. Eat for the body weight you want to be.
Oh, I agree with that 100%.
You know, so if you're 170 and you want to be 190, you have to eat to as a 190 pounder, you know? Yep. So you have to up your protein, up your car. Like it's just, you have to progress. It's just like what you do on the hack squad over the course of 5-6 years, you add a little bit of weight every time. You know, you have to do it with your food too. As you get bigger, you have to eat more. Why do you think it's so hard to maintain a pro level physique? It's such a high maintenance project.
Yeah. Now your maintenance levels of food, rest and all that are higher than they were when you were a kid, blasting your mind out to go up.
That's why it's so easy for me to be 260 pretty ripped.
Right.
Because, you know, I'd gone up with the food so high that like a default setting is now here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, plus you've had the tissue for so long. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, but someone asked me on my post. I just do the Q&A all the time. what my goals are for my physique when I'm done. And I said that I want to be down to 230. Because I just think I'd feel great. I think I'd feel athletic again. I'd like to get back to doing some of my athletic things. And Dante screenshots it and sends back to me because I said something like as fast as possible or whatever. He screenshots back to me and goes, isn't going to happen. Right. And I'm like, yeah, it is. He was like, you'll have to not eat and not train. You're not going to go in the gym and train like a bitch. He goes, and even if you take, you know, TRT at 200, your body, and I didn't think about how long I've been 260 plus pounds.
Yeah.
I've been over 270, like never been below it since, God, I mean, even stage weight was 270 a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you start to realize like, man, my body is used to holding this tissue, you know, or even like I told you before with the last couple of years, I've just been maintaining. So my eating has not been that great. The only thing holding it on is just training.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have clients that eat more than I do.
Oh, it's tons.
You know, I got way more than me. And I'm like, I was telling somebody, because now that I'm getting kicking with Chris again, I'm like, man, I'm going to grow. Because I'll just get back to consistently eating all my food seven times a day.
Almost all my clients eat more than me.
Right.
How's that?
You ever do that when you're reading? Because I'm like, I'm up. I tell somebody, I'm like, man, I gotta up your food. You're kind of are you good to eat? They're like, yeah, I can eat more. I open up. I'm like, fuck, you're eating so much.
I got a couple guys on. I got a couple guys on seven meals, and like six of them are solid, and one of them is a shake.
Yeah.
And I open the file, and I'm like, God damn, am I fucking over this bullshit?
Glad it's not me. Fuck.
I got five meals. Maybe one of them's a shake, so I only have to eat four meals a day. It's like so
one breakfast easy. Is just so easy anyways. It's got egg whites and shit.
Yeah, so that's funny. Okay, I got one. What are the best and worst? This came over my stories last week when I did a bunch of stories, and I had to ask you. What are the best and worst fashion trends that you've taken part in as a bodybuilder?
Ooh. I mean, I'm a fucking fashion disaster every day.
Some of the things you look back on, you ever see a picture where you're wearing an outfit and you're like, what was I thinking?
All right. So this isn't all right. I'm doing a two-parter because I had both.
Well, we need best and worst. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were all terrible. But so when I first got into bodybuilding, number one, I had the bandana, the over the ears bandana, you know, red bandana. But then to add insult to injury, I used to wear Tiffany hoop earrings with them, like a pirate.
Oh, I remember the pirate look.
Oh, fuck. I mean, I look at it.
That was like, you were also
here's your parrot, brick.
Yeah. Like,
well, and that's the other thing. And that was back. So I was still going to all the small shows of like, God, Blink before they were Blink 182 and ska music and shit like that. So
to
like,
see Rancid.
You know, I did see Rancid actually here. And it's funny to think of how big some of these bands went. I'm like, oh, I saw them with 32 other people one time.
Yeah. Like,
but yeah, so I mean, so I think the pirate fucking earrings really just brought it all together. Like I was just looking for my parrot so I could bring him around.
Right.
And what's funny is every time I put up a picture, like a throwback, somebody would be like, bring back the bandana. I'm like, dick. That would definitely be the worst. And then the other part that I missed a large section of the bad fashion trend, but I did rock the baggy pants with the fucking Atomics for a long time. Like everywhere.
How baggy? Like the California Crazy Wears or the
Zubas? Yeah, the ones that tapered down to the ankle tight. But I mean, you could shit in them and no one would know.
Yeah.
They were so baggy everywhere else.
And did they have the middle panel? Like were they the Hammer style pants?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Gator's Gym made those.
Yep. So they had them and so did what was it called? So with an N. God damn it. There was another brand. No Limits. Yeah, I had some of their stuff too. Absolutely terrible. And I wore it every day.
Every day.
You know, I'm like, and then with those, remember, you wore the slinky t-shirt. The fucking painted on. It was basically Under Armour before Under Armour came out.
Right.
Yeah, douchebag 101. That's me. Hi.
That's crazy. Now, is there any old fashioned that you really wish would come back? Like you loved it, and you're like, fuck, I wish I could wear that again, but I couldn't get away with it.
God, no, because thankfully there's not, because I'm the asshole that just does whatever he wants anyway.
So. Right.
It'd be more of an issue of, oh, I can't find those anymore. Like one thing that I can always tell old guys. So I still, as you know, for the longest time, I had my Adidas pants that they're baggy all the way down to the ankle. And I still wear them. They're probably 5 years old. And sure as shit, every time I post a video, somebody around our age will message me, where the fuck did you get those pants? They're all tight at the bottom now. I'm like, I got them in 2015.
Right.
I just managed to buy enough of them that I finally retired every pair except for one. I've had the ass sewn up so many times it blew out. I think I told you at one point I got a surgeon to sew them for me, which I thought was awesome. It was like a professional. I was like, I am a surgeon fixing my pants right now.
And you had to go, you had to buy some gas pants because you couldn't find like good old, like good baggy track pants.
Yeah, so I had to go back to a bodybuilding world where someone would be like, yeah, we still make those. And by the way, fun fact, Gasp did a sale over the weekend, 50% off the entire site. I bought more because I'm still cheap. Damn.
Right.
I'm still cheap and Gasp is expensive as shit, man. I'm like, that first time, remember, the first time I was bragging to you is how I spent $400 or wasted $400 on pants. Yeah. I'm like, who spends $400 on pants?
Well, if you need them, you need them. That's funny. Well, you can. You know, the best part is you can write that off because you use it for your videos.
Yeah, thank God I write everything off.
There you go. I know. I know my accountant calls me. He's like, you got like $9,000 in restaurant write-offs. Yep. I'm like, every single person I eat with is...
Yeah, they're in the industry.
Talking about bodybuilding, or they have like it's every single time. So it's funny. He's like, oh, okay.
That's a great thing, is you're like, it's actually 100% legit.
That's all I talk about. Is it the podcast, the fucking this, like just fucking all I talk about. So there you go. It's my whole day. The whole day's a write off. Exactly. My accountant. You know, my accountant laughs. He's good though. As far as fashion for me, I'm so glad I got a fucking eyeful when I was young. Because, I mean, I started training in 90. So I got the old 80s fashion was still in the gym.
Yeah.
I remember going to the gym and the aerobics class would be on. Step class was new. You got a step class going, right? And you look in and all the women are wearing the full tights with the thong tight. Yeah. So like black tights with a purple thong. And then they got the fucking fuzzy fat leg warmers up their calves and white Reeboks everywhere. And they're going at it. And I remember back in the day when those thongs were in.
Yeah.
All the guys were like, oh man, I don't know if I can handle those thongs. Cause you can like see the cheeks and you get the full like, right? Little did I know that it would progress to where they're just basically wearing the thong in the gym.
Yeah, now they don't. They just got rid of the tights.
So yeah, that was funny. I caught that era, right? And my favorite era of clothing that I remember was I had that mid-90s super hardcore thing. So I had the lumberjack shirt cut off at the elbow with the threads hanging.
Like Nasser.
Yeah, like Nasser, and I would train in a fucking cut off, torn up lumberjack shirt, had a hole in the back, and big baggy hammer pants with the middle section that like separated the legs, so they were super baggy, tucked in to the socks.
Of course, because how are you going to see those socks?
Right, with work boots.
Fucking had the Tims on.
Caterpillars.
Oh, there you go. Docs.
I had Docs, actually. I was a Doc guy, so I had these Doc Martens. But that's how we fucking dressed. And then if it wasn't a lumberjack shirt, I had the big boat neck Gators gym
shirt
that went from like clavicle to clavicle.
Did you have the tank top underneath of it that you
need
could
the
see?
Thin? You need a thin, narrow tank top, so the straps have to come up high, so that the trap is fully exposed, and then it gives this maximum trap illusion. This like huge trap. And then in grade 12, essentially my traps are the same size they are now. My neck has been the same size for like 25 years. So I was just this kid in high school and just had fucking huge traps and no, and just no neck.
Nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny, man. But that was like the best. Those were the best days. And the bandana you mentioned, the red paisley bandana, I still break that out once in a while. Take that for a spin.
You're a machine.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit of nostalgia.
You know, it's funny. Speaking of fashion that I have to bring up. So my very first big bodybuilding show was the USA's. Oh, God, I don't even know what year it was at. But I remember I'm in the lobby. And mind you, like, bodybuilding is a different level of the women don't like clothing pretty often. So I look over the corner of my eye. I see this girl who has cut out the zipper of her pants that are painted on. Like, I don't know how, but I mean, she had to shave to put her pants on, is what I'm telling you. So I'm with my friend Bruce, who owned the stores at the time that I eventually bought from him. And I go, Bruce, I'll do one of these. And he looks at me and he goes, oh, dude, you don't have to look out of the corner of your eyes. They want you to look. He goes like this. He goes to her, hey, up and down, smiles, gives her a nod. She goes, hey. I was like, that's allowed? He's like, she's not wearing pants for a reason.
That's funny.
So as a kid at like early 20s, I was like, you can't just look at her and say, hey. He's like, why do you think she's wearing that shit? She wants you to look.
That's funny.
I was dying. And so that was my first experience of like, oh, this is a different world. Because once you go into the bubble, you're in the bubble. And no one else thinks it's weird, except for the new guy who's kind of like, how come you don't zip up your pants?
It's funny. I was on Twitter the other day. I try to stay off Twitter because it just so much stuff on there makes me angry. So I dare to peek at it occasionally.
Right.
And I like it when I see a tweet from like someone in the normal world that relates to my world from a different perspective. So this one lady, so I don't know, someone I follow retweeted it.
Right.
And it was, for God's sakes, will someone please tell these fucking fitness girls that their tights are fucking obscene? No one wants to see this. And I clicked on it and I read the replies. Right. The replies were overwhelmingly in support. They were like, I can't believe anyone thinks tights are pants. Tights are not suitable for airlines. Tights are not suitable for restaurants. Tights are not. And people were agreeing. They're like, these tights are fucking disgusting. All these fucking fit girls in their tights, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, holy shit, the general population hates these fucking things. But to us, it's just absolutely normal.
Yeah, there's pants.
They're just pants.
I don't think anything of it, yeah.
Of course, obviously a giant amount of that is rooted in jealousy.
Yeah, of course.
Because, I mean, you know, they can't wear them.
I think that makes it harder for me to notice because of where I live. It's funny, but I didn't know this until I started traveling more. I had no idea because I spend the majority of my life Scottsdale, LA, San Diego, where everyone's mindful of being in shape.
Yeah.
So when you go to other places, you're like, oh, this isn't normal. Because like here, I'm more like funny thing, but even when clients send me like their starting points, I'll ask them like for the training, are your implants are below or above the muscle? That's a common question to me. And every now and then I get, I don't have implants. I'm like, oh, okay. Didn't know they made them like that. Like, where I'm from, I can't remember the last time I saw.
Right. I'm from a plastic surgery capital of the United States other than Los Angeles.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's funny because you're right. Like here it's normal. I mean, literally, if you walk out anywhere, tights, shorts, you know, and you don't even think about it. Like I've never looked and been like, oh, look at that ass. I mean, she's wearing pants to me.
I know. It's so normal. It's so normal. It's not even a thing, right?
Yeah.
But it was funny when you see how the gen pop reacts. I saw another great one on Twitter. I was going to ask you, get to it because it has to do with the airlines.
Go.
There's a video. I don't know if you saw this. It kind of went and made the rounds on the news and all the websites of a guy. He's sitting in the back row of the plane.
Right.
And so his seat doesn't recline.
I hate that. Yep.
The seat in front of him, the lady reclines back.
Yes. So he can't even move away from her.
And so he can't move away, but he's punching her seat. Just fucking punching it. And he looks like he's going to lose his mind. He's like, fucking fuck, fuck, fuck. And she's filming him. And she's kind of like, and her remark was, I paid for my seat. I have to recline it because the guy in front of me reclined. I'm going to sleep this whole flight. And this guy's punching my seat. Right. So first of all, it's a guy punching a woman's seat.
Yeah, that's a problem all by itself.
And she put the video up. And I was completely blown away at how divided the response was.
Right.
Half the people said, you paid for that seat. It reclines. You can recline it.
Right.
The other half said, reclining is rude. No one should ever recline. The airline should make no reclining seats. This is fucking horrible behavior to do this to someone. His seat doesn't recline. She should think about him. And I was like, interesting question.
Right.
And I was blown away at how 50-50 it was. And the people who said she paid $800 for that seat and she wants to recline it, it only reclines 2 inches. It's fucking economy seat. It's not like she went back. But they're like, if she wants to recline it, that's her right. She paid for that seat. He should get in trouble for punching the seat.
Right.
Well, how do you feel?
Well, it's actually pretty simple to me. Like, number one, I do think he's an idiot for punching the seat, because I look at that as like, you know, now you're essentially making this a physical situation, you know, and I find if I want something, that's not how you get it.
Right.
You know, if someone were to ask me if there was any way I could not lean back because I'm 6'5" and when you do that, this happens, I'd be like, oh, okay. But it's kind of like I look at it as the same scenario as if I'm backing out of a parking spot and the guy is laying on his horn, or if I'm at the gym and someone's waiting and hawking over the piece of equipment I'm using, that slows me down. It doesn't make me go faster. You know what I mean? So your behavior kind of plays a role in mine. And from an airline standpoint, I think that they should absolutely fucking lose their mind on that guy. Because, dude, it can only escalate because of what you're doing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And if it was, I mean, if I was on that plane sitting anywhere near, he would have taken a verbal lashing for sure. Yeah. As he's beating the piss out of my mother's seat or whoever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone's like a woman, mother's seat. That's just ridiculous. But I think one thing with that factor is, the way those planes are set up, we're literally like squeaking in one more seat or one more everything every year. I mean, they are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. There comes a point where the airline has to stop squeezing every penny and just understand, like, to me, his seat should be able to go back. Every seat should be able to go back if one can, because if not, I mean, it's how dominoes work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you reach a point where the one doesn't go, then yeah, it just takes the one asshole who got that seat, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's ways around it, but I mean, yeah, I think it's ridiculous. But as far as was she wrong to recline? No, you know, absolutely not. I mean, that's what she has her seat for, and that's her comfort. Her job, I mean, is not to make him comfortable. So she has to be uncomfortable so he can be comfortable.
Right. That was the one response I got, because I actually commented. I said, there's no way I would ever ask someone to recline my seat, and I wouldn't expect anyone to ask me.
Yeah.
And then someone responded like, oh, look at this guy, all the juice making him entitled.
So and it'd be the juice, go, if you were small, because you're white, and if you came from money, it's because you have money.
And I said, so I'm entitled because I want to recline the seat I paid for. I think you're entitled because you want me to not recline the seat I paid for.
Yeah. Like I owe it to you.
Yeah. Like entitled means you get something for free.
Yeah.
I paid for my seat. You didn't pay for my seat.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm like a absolute unapologetic absolutionist on this one. If the seat reclines and you fucking paid for it, then the only thing stopping you is whether or not you don't want to recline. Like, let's say you have a fucking 6'5" basketball player behind you and he's having a real hard time. You'd say, listen, dude, I'll do you a fucking solid on this. And then maybe if you really want to sleep, I would probably say to the flight attendant, hey, listen, I got to recline, but this guy's 6'5". Is there any possible way you can find anyone that wants to switch seats with me? Someone who doesn't want to recline. Maybe they're working on their laptop.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I just thought it was a crazy thing. I couldn't believe it was so divided.
Yeah, it always shocks me, too, when you see examples of people who just think one way that you don't even think is debatable. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
I didn't think anyone think that, and 50% of you think that. Holy shit.
Yeah, it was the shock. It was like the fitness girls with the pants.
Yeah.
This is fucking unacceptable.
Yeah. Got it. Okay, Karen. By the way, you and
okay,
your
Karen, yeah,
crew
yeah.
can get the manager in here ASAP.
Okay, your turn. You go ahead.
All right, I got some more important shots here. Where did it go? Boom, here we are. So I had to bounce into that weird section of my phone to find that guy's because...
Is that where all the porn is?
No, because he couldn't, for some reason, he couldn't like just answer correctly, so he sent me a DM. And I literally responded back with, I'm like, ask in the box. He said it wouldn't fit.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's like... It's not that big. Relax. Relax. Okay, here's a good one, actually. Kind of fun. What's a piece of bro science that you thought was real for the longest time?
Oh, fucking awesome question.
Right?
That's a whole episode.
I was going to say, as I read it, I thought of like five. I was like, oh, those are quick.
Taking sodium out.
Right.
Is like playing Russian roulette.
Mm-hmm.
You take sodium out, there's like that window of time where someone just dries the fuck up sometimes, and then they suddenly just collapse into a puddle of fucking flatness.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's
a hell of a risk reward right there.
Yeah, that's like trying to hit a grand slam when all you need is a base hit. You know?
Yeah, Chris used to always tell me to shoot for 95%.
You know what? It's not bad.
95 is almost unbeatable. He said, and if you go for 100 and miss, you're at 80. And 80 exactly. is beatable.
I heard someone say that the reason Dexter Jackson has six, is it six Arnold Classics or five?
I don't remember, but
it's the record.
He's the record wins of all time for wins total. So
someone told me the reason Dexter has the most wins, the most Arnolds, and an Olympia is because every once in a while, everyone else tries to hit grand slams and the one guy comes up and just hits a nice base hit.
Yep.
And everyone else is like, fuck. And he, you know what I mean? And yeah. Dexter gets on base every fucking time and you're going to win the odd game like that.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of something that was just like similar analogy.
No, I totally get that. Cause yeah, I mean, Dexter's never done the 03 Coleman where he just walked out and it was over. Or 09 J. So, no, I agree. So, mine would be I used to be obsessed about the anabolic window. And the speed of proteins that have to be – it had to be whey protein because whey protein digests faster. I had to have casein before bed because casein digests slower. And somehow in my mind, 50 grams of protein was not 50 grams of protein. So, yeah, the anabolic window is definitely mine. Like, I used to preach that shit when I worked at the stores. Like, you must. I remember I'd get done training, and I'd open my gym bag right then and there, like not even move from the piece of equipment.
On the floor.
Water in, shake it, drink it. Okay, now we can move on with life. I don't want to lose. I don't want to have any catabolism taking place.
Yeah. Now, I know it's not good evidence because I'm, like, much smaller and lighter than I used to be, but as far as the quality of my workouts and my strength and how much muscle I'm holding and all, you know, everything I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
I have been sort of accidentally sort of playing with that, like not eating for like 90 minutes.
Right.
And part of my thinking was, well, I used to train and then do 45 minutes of cardio for prep.
Right.
And then I'd drive home, which is another half hour.
Right.
And then I'd eat. And I didn't lose any muscle during those preps.
Yeah.
So I just sort of like, we finish training and I usually go work around the gym for an hour.
Right.
And then I'll have like a meal or a shake. And actually, I think I got leaner because of it.
That makes sense, actually. I think that's one of those things that's just so much overthinking. And I think what's most common about it is the people who, even myself back then, I was doing that while doing McDonald's three times a day.
Right.
But I was so concerned about that fucking anabolic window eating bullshit the rest of the fucking day. You know what I mean? So yeah, that'd easily be my mark. I'm the same way now. I never eat right after I train. It's not by any design. I train hard enough that I don't want whole food. And I only drink a shake a day. Right. So I just wait, you know, cause usually I want to go have a big meal after I train. So it'll be 45 minutes or so before I get to the restaurant that I order.
I also almost always have like a good solid meal an hour before training.
Right.
So like steak, chicken, rice, that sort of shit. And like steak takes 8 hours to digest and absorb. So you're not without aminos in your blood.
Yeah, I think that's where people fuck up is the mindset is it took me 5 minutes to eat, so it's 5 minutes, so it's gone.
Yeah.
So, like, you know how long it takes to break down that chicken, that steak, that whatever? Yeah,
veggies and all the fiber.
It's never not. You know what I mean? Especially if you're eating 5 or 6 times a day. Basically, your body's working and they got food all day long. Same thing goes with the intra-workout thing. Like, I've done them. I've not done them. You can never tell the difference.
There's so many other bro science things like, you know, I just had a client win her pro card on the weekend. You know, Cass Gillis.
Came in just as we thought. Yeah, she looked awesome.
I got to thank you, too. I don't want to never, ever give credit. I sent Dusty a couple sets of pictures, and I said, hey, Dusty, I think she looks great, but because you have a lot more experience with NPC judges.
Right.
And with the new way the NPC and the IFBB have put out these guidelines –
yeah,
I thought because figure up in Canada was always a little different up until just recently when the kind of federations merged. Right.
Yep.
And so figure in Canada was always like the shredded girls would win every time, like the more shredded, the better.
Yep.
And of course, I'm hardcore. I like everyone to be shredded.
Yeah.
So I sent you pictures a few times. I was like, is she getting too hard? Like, and you were like, she looks fucking awesome. And I was like, OK, because, you know, you've done a lot more U.S. figure girls, right?
Yep.
And I thought it's going to be some of those judges. And then when I saw the live stream, they panned the judging panel. I recognized like 4 of the judges. They were right from this.
We're going to be fine.
People I seen at North Americans and stuff judging, I was like, okay, we'll be okay. We'll be okay. So yeah. So thanks for that. Cause your outside opinion on just like she looks ready. Is she ready? You're like, she's pretty much ready. Like,
I remember when you sent the video and she was turning, I saw the glutes flicker. I'm like, there we go. Just enough.
So she was eating fucking squirrely bread, like, you know, sprouted grain bread.
Yeah.
She's having 4 slices of bread a day for her carbs. She's like, can I change this rice to bread? And I'm like, give it a shot. And
we'll see.
She's perfectly fine.
Yep.
You know, and just she also said to me about a week out, she goes, I'm sort of nervous because you're too calm.
That has me worried.
and so I realize that happens with me sometimes. That's a problem. Is my clients are worried that I'm not doing enough because they're used to their coach changing 20 things a week out.
Right. Yeah.
And then I'm like, yeah, you look good. Send me pics in the morning. And they're like, so what are we changing? I'm like, nothing. And they're like, but we're 6 days out. And I'm like, yeah.
And you look awesome.
You look awesome. last Wednesday we were 10 days out. You looked awesome then. I didn't change anything. Like,
you know what I get sometimes? It's so funny. Is in the same realm. I've got a few guys right now, probably literally like 4, where we've went. I do check-ins every 5 days in the off season. Okay. I just like the communication. It's overkill as far as seeing, but I want to be
keeps them fresh.
Yeah,
keeps them fresh right up here in the lobe.
Well, and they know you're in. You know, so I've got about 4 guys right now that I've had to say, I promise I'm not being lazy. But dude, you're changing so fast. I'd be dumb to change anything.
I have to
say it because I don't want them to be like, fuck, it's been 20 days. We've changed literally nothing other than the fact that I keep improving. So it's like I look at the pictures. I'm like, well, maybe next week it'll slow down. But I hope not because, fuck, this is awesome.
Yeah. That's a funny thing. They expect a lot of changes. But sometimes a good coach doesn't change anything. It's like one of my favorite sayings about a good drummer.
Right.
A good drummer knows when not to drum.
Valid, which is the same with this.
And if you listen to AC/DC, that's what Phil Rudd was. He was just a perfect rock drummer. He's not there to put the show on. He's, you know what I mean? There's space in the drumming.
Yeah.
And that's a good coach. You got to be able to know when not to do anything.
Yeah. Well, and you can't be afraid that you can't. The only thing that I will change when that starts to happen is, and I learned this from Chris actually, because he told me he made a mistake one time. Chris has, I believe, three shows, might be four, that he openly has a hard time with, where he knows he made a mistake. And at least two of those were things were going too well, and they just kind of stopped watching or like really being on it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because when things are a mess, you're fucking on it because you're like, dude, we got to pull this off. We got 6 hours. You got to lose 10 pounds. You know what I mean? That kind of shit. So the only thing I will change at that point is I start asking for pictures even more often.
Yeah.
Because I don't want there to be – they went flat 4 days ago, but I don't know about it.
Right.
You know, so when things are really cranking, I'm like, give me pictures tomorrow.
Well, I often tell people about the first time I worked with Chris. It was 6 weeks out. He was getting frustrated because the body stalled.
Right.
And the – and I said, are we going to change anything? He goes, yeah, you're going to send me pictures every single morning from here to the show. And I was like, done.
Yeah.
And it was every single, and I was, there was points where I thought he was going to say, okay, just send me pictures Wednesday. But no, I said every fucking morning for 6 weeks straight.
Yep.
And I wound up in, at that point, I wound up the fucking best I'd ever been, you know?
Yep.
So that's how it works.
That same routine, but it is funny how that locks in because being, I think that's the other problem is I've learned, thankfully, clients are great at teaching coaches what they don't do. I didn't used to say anything unless there were problems.
Right.
So they would send their check-ins. I'm like, cool, everything looks good. Send me pictures in 5 days. And if there was a problem, I'd start asking more questions. How was the water yesterday? How was this? How was this? So, and I actually, you know who taught me this? Was my massage therapist. One day I got done and I was like, and I've been seeing her for years. And I said, man, I feel great today now that we're done. And she goes, you do? I said, yeah, real good, thanks. She goes, I've always wondered if you thought I was any good because you never say anything. And I was like, well, I keep coming back.
Like, right.
I assumed that that was, you know, and that was like a light bulb to me because I do that with everything.
Right.
It's like, fuck, I need to learn to tell people when things are good because they may not know that they're good, you know, because I'm thinking you're phenomenal. Are you kidding me? Of course you're. I've been seeing you every single week for years.
Right.
You're the best. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I never really it never registered to me that I needed to say anything because I'm like, I assume she knew she was the best.
My money was telling you.
Yeah. And my referrals.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting thing. So those are two of the things I've really learned with that is like, man, you have to tell people because when you do that actually puts them in a state of ease, which I thought their own pictures would have already done. I'm like,
right. And that goes back to like, there's all these different types of people that, you know, some people respond well to compliments, whereas some people respond well to like positive criticism or constructive criticism.
Yep.
Other people don't respond well to criticism at all.
Yeah.
Like, so, and, you know, so we're so used to ourselves because we put our, you know, we're dealing with ourselves when we prep.
Yeah.
And I don't say anything good about myself the whole fucking diet.
Yeah. Exactly. I just told the kid the other day, I was like, or it was Cole Eastfold.
Oh,
I told him, I said, yeah, there's about 10 pictures I've ever seen of myself that I was like, oh, look good.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Over 15 years, I've got 10 photos.
And I just keep refiltering them for Instagram.
Exactly. I'm going to make it black and white today. See if anyone notices. Wish I would have grown the beard out years ago.
Fuck. Photoshop a bandana so it looks like a different change the year.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. You got one? Want to do one more?
Yeah, why not? You know, actually, I'm going to go with one from last week.
You got a non-bodybuilding one? If you do.
I actually, I think I actually do. Okay. Yeah, I do actually here. It's a semi non-bodybuilding one.
Perfect. Perfect. Everything we're about.
You know, so here's the question. How do you survive as a bodybuilder and in a relationship if your significant other does not understand the sport?
Am I supposed to be honest?
Yes. Your honesty is key here, Ron.
It's not about bodybuilding. It's about when he used the word doesn't understand, that implies to me that there's a bit of a negative.
Yeah, for sure.
Reaction there, right?
Yep.
You know, because Emily's really into house music, but I don't have a problem with it.
Right.
Like, at all. You know, she went to a house music show with her cousin on Saturday. I'm like, go have a good time. I'm going to go to the gym and build a deadlift platform.
Right. I'm not going to come do that with you, but yeah.
Yeah, which is how I spent my Saturday. So basically, I had another viewer tell me that basically makes me Evan Santopani now that I'm building things.
Right? In my ass.
Okay. I would say that I don't think relationships work if your significant other isn't really cool with what you do. They don't have to be into it.
Right.
They don't have to want to do it, but they got to be cool with it. There's got to be a positive vibe there.
Right.
It's got to be like, oh, baby, you could do this. Like, fuck, you know, let's just hang in there. Let's see how you look next week. They don't even have to have anything to do with it. They can be like, what did your coach say? Like, how's your coach? Like, but if they're negative about it, I just don't see it working. But that's me. I'm not able to make those things work. They have to work a little easier.
Right. No, I agree. You know? I don't think huge lessons I've learned over the years are you gotta take care of you first.
Yeah, you gotta pay yourself first.
Proponent of like getting behind somebody doing all their shit. But with that in mind, then part of putting yourself first is if anybody brings you backwards against your goals, you've got an issue. You know, I had a client just recently tell me, he's like, oh, I'm really locked in, you know, and my girlfriend is really supportive, but she wants us to go out on the weekends. And part of that was she wants him to eat with her. And I'm like, well, then she's not supportive.
Right.
I'd be like me saying, yeah, absolutely, Ron, go to the gym. And then when you're gone, I'm a cunt when you get home because you went to the gym. You know, no, I agree. Yeah. I just don't think it should be that hard. Relationships shouldn't be that hard. If something's important to you, then if it doesn't work, they'll find someone that fits them better, and so will you.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed.
So, yeah, that's the – I love when people ask advice for, like, relationships and stuff. I'm like, I'm not really good at those, but I'll tell you what I think.
I remember I had a girlfriend a long time ago. I remember I asked her out at the gym.
Right.
And I said, hey, you know, would you give me your number? And she looked me – right in the eye, and she's like, do you do steroids? And I go, yeah. And she goes, okay.
Checked your honesty first, huh?
And I was like, okay, she knows what, like, she knows, you know, that much about me, the whole bodybuilder thing. She gets it. And right. She just wanted to double check, you know?
See, I look at that as a test for honesty, too.
Yeah, and then there was never, ever a problem. We never had a problem. Supported me in the gym and the competing and all that was fine. Came to my shows, cheered, awesome.
Right.
Never a problem. You know what I mean? So it was just funny. But it was like, yeah, that opening moment was just funny to me. I was like, yeah. You know, I thought she knew already because the gym was full of fucking monkeys, but, you know.
Hello, I'm the silverback, so.
Oh man, well, it's been awesome, good, Dusty. I actually feel like we could chat for another half an hour, but my bladder is just fucking bursting.
You're getting older.
I got a whole liter of water in me. This is empty, so.
Yeah, well, I drank your favorite today.
Yeah, we got to talk. We need to make. I don't know how much is that a bottle. It seems like.
It's like $1.25 when they're on sale.
Okay.
Find a way.
I thought they were like $3, so that was like rich people drank those.
Oh God, no! I'm too cheap for that. $3 when they're full price. I don't even like to pull the trigger when they're two. I'm like,
you're like, I buy knockoff Perrier's. These are just resale bottles.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen. $3 a bottle. You're fucking crazy.
Okay.
All right, man. Until next time.
Yeah. Remember, everybody. Subscribe, like, comment, share. We come out on Wednesdays, and we really appreciate everybody. And again, we're now on Spotify. So we're just trying to find ways to just fucking work our way into your day.
We're infiltrating.
Yes. Can't wait to remember Arm Day. You can listen to us. We're not opposed to that. And obviously cardio sessions all around the world. Thanks, Dusty. Episode 27 in the books. We got a cool guest next week. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Hardcore. A little fucking hardcore. We're going to have some good. You might need subtitles.
I have no idea what he just said, but he seemed serious.
Yeah. Okay. Remember, everybody, it's just bodybuilding.